Welcome to Health Connections, a program about people, health, and policy. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Medicare for All is in the news as candidates to be the Democratic nominee for president next year jockey for position. The discussions surrounding Medicare for All exemplify the shifting sands among progressive and center-left wings of the Democratic Party ahead of next year's election. In addition, there are growing gaps between Republicans and Democrats, as well as Americans and their elected representatives, on the topic of health care. What exactly does Medicare for All mean? Who's for it? Who's against it? What does it mean outside the Beltway? How might it affect you? What alternative ideas are being discussed? That is our conversation today on Health Connections. And as usual, we welcome Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing. Dr. Myers, good to see you again.
Likewise, Brandon. Thank you.
I'd like to begin our conversation, as we talked about, with Democratic nominees for president who are raising this subject as they're hitting the campaign trail this year. We can begin with Bernie Sanders because he released a detailed description of his vision for what Medicare for All means. What's his starting point on this?
Well, undoubtedly, the Sanders plan, Medicare for All, is the most progressive of all the options that are swirling around in the discussions. Medicare for All basically is a national single-payer plan that would provide health care for all Americans via an expanded Medicare option. So the name says it all. The Sanders plan has some important characteristics. The plan calls for the prohibition of all private plans that would be in competition with Medicare and the elimination of all cost sharing. In addition, the plan calls for coverage for long-term care in home and community settings, which is not currently present in Medicare. Medicaid would continue to cover institutional care. So Medicare for All, for a comparison point, is most similar to the Canadian model. We have a single payer, the federal government, but we rely on private providers.
Well, how is Senator Sanders' plan being received?
There's two major reactions, Brandon. The first is sticker shock. How can we afford national health insurance with such expansive benefits? Many people are scratching their heads about that. And then the other reaction is many Americans are reticent to give up their private insurance. They like it.
As we mentioned a little earlier in the discussion, Senator Sanders' plan is only one of many. When we talk about Medicare for All, that's not a single idea or a single vision. What are some of the other alternatives that are being proposed?
Well, there's a more incremental approach that's being promoted in reaction to the Sanders plan, and it's called Medicare for America. We saw kind of glimmers of this type of plan during the 2018 midterm elections when some candidates said, well, let's allow anyone under age 55 to buy into Medicare. That was one variant. Another one was, let's allow Medicare to be an option for anyone under age 65. The Medicare for America plan currently being discussed promotes universal coverage, but the important distinction is it preserves employment-based coverage. So private insurers can operate Medicare plans like we see today with the Medicare Advantage plans. And Medicare Advantage plans are very popular. About a third of Medicare enrollees choose Medicaid Advantage. The plan, unlike the Sanders plan, includes premiums and deductibles, but there's also some protections for our listeners and everyday Americans. Out-of-pocket costs would be limited at $3,500 for an individual or $5,000 per family, and premiums could not exceed 10% of the annual income for the family.
Okay, this other idea, Medicare for America, how is it being received?
Certainly it's not as extreme as Medicare for All, the Sanders plan, but it's also inducing opposition from powerful lobbies such as insurers, hospitals, pharmaceutical makers, the drug makers, and physicians. I think this is really important because the Clinton plan and all other health reforms before the Clinton plan failed because of the opposition of these powerful lobbies.
So when you say the Clinton plan, you're referring to President Clinton back in the 1990s.
Yes, sorry, I was being familiar.
So we're going back about 20 years or more talking about efforts to reform or change the healthcare system, which, as you say, face very strong headwinds.
Right, and the most noteworthy thing about the Affordable Care Act was that these powerful lobbies that had always opposed before came on board in support of the Affordable Care Act, but now we're seeing them rally again against some of the reform plans, including Medicare for All and Medicare for America. Let's use an example to illustrate this, Brandon. UnitedHealthcare is the largest insurer in the United States, and it's weighed in on Medicare for All and hinted about its opposition to other reform proposals. The CEO of UnitedHealthcare favors universal coverage, but he wants to see expansion of existing private and public programs. To get a sense of how disruptive the Medicare for All plan would be, we've seen a recent loss of $28 billion in market value of shares of hospital and insurer stock. That's going to cause major ripples through those two industries and others. I think another point, though, is to distinguish Medicare for All from Medicare for America. Medicare for America addresses affordability for the country when compared to Medicare for All because of the premiums, because of the out-of-pocket costs, because the benefits aren't as expansive. It raises the issue, though, of affordability for certain individuals and families precisely for the same reason, because of the premiums, because of the cost sharing. So I think that debate's going to be important to follow. Critics say that Medicare for America diminishes the federal government's ability to negotiate lower prices, which some people are saying that's one way we can get over the sticker shock. So if you don't have as many people in the public plan, you don't have the same clout at the negotiating table.
As we said, different flavors of this particular concept. Is it accurate to say that something less radical, if we're just creating a spectrum with less radical or less extreme changes, and on the other end of that kind of more extreme, more radical changes, is something kind of closer to that conservative with a small c end, that less radical end, stands a better chance of passing in this Congress?
Yes, I think we need to look at incrementalism. Basically, Brandon, that's what you're talking about. Incrementalism generally rules in policymaking in our country. People favor incrementalism for the very reason that it's criticized. It maintains the status quo to a certain extent and minimizes disruptions such as major industry disruptions associated with change and the expected political and other objections to that change. So I think a more incremental approach has more legs than an approach that isn't as incremental. People resist change even when the change is viewed as positive. Polls point to this basic fact. Americans want better health care, but the rub is how to achieve it.
That leads me to my next question. We talked about the political side. We talked about the lobbying side. Do we have much data on how Americans feel about these proposals?
We do. There's another basic fact that's important as we consider these proposals. Americans who have health care coverage are satisfied with their coverage. We saw that during the Affordable Care Act debates. Many are uneasy about moving from a private option to a public option. In general, Americans prefer incremental improvements in healthcare. We do not see broad-based support for blowing up the employer-based coverage and private health insurance markets.
We raise this topic from time to time on this show. I'm going to raise it again. What about improving the Affordable Care Act? In other words, we've heard this debated before. Stick with the parts that people generally like and it's perceived work well. Change or get rid of the parts that don't work so well or are more unpopular. Keep the framework of the ACA, maybe work within that. How's that doing?
That's a great question. The ACA has about a 50% approval rating. It's hovered there for a long time. Americans rally around the ACA when provisions are being threatened, but we don't see a lot of enthusiasm for the ACA. But they don't want something too threatening, trying to find that balance between excitement but not threatening. Some are promoting a new public option plan based on Medicare for individuals through the ACA marketplace. That's an incremental improvement that builds upon the ACA marketplace. Another variant of this is rather than a Medicare buy-in, we see a Medicaid buy-in. And you might recall that a public option was originally part of the Affordable Care Act bill that passed in the House but didn't make it through the Senate. So that idea's been around for a while. It'll be interesting to see how the discussions go.
How are the Democratic candidates, as the field looks right now anyway, arrayed on the continuum? What are their ideas here about health care reform in general?
Well, Democratic candidates for president and other Democrats, like most Americans, generally support universal coverage. The rub, again, is how to make this happen. This is still a subject of major debate. But we do know, Brandon, Cory Booker, Kristen Gillibrand, Kamala Harris, and Elizabeth Warren are co-sponsors of the Medicare for All bill. However, they do seem to be walking back their support a little bit.
We're getting away from Medicare for All, Medicare for America, these specific plans. What about the broad topic of healthcare reform as it's viewed by everyday Americans?
I think that's a good question and something we should be able to build upon. As I've already said, universal coverage is broadly supported in concept, until the details are added in.
The devil seems to be in the details there.
Exactly. There's solid support for proposals that expand the role of Medicare and Medicaid. We know Medicare and Medicaid, so they're familiar to us. Optional buy-in programs have support across the political parties. That's very noteworthy in my mind. However, as details are revealed about plans like Medicare for All, the debate intensifies and support wanes. Americans favor Medicare for All until the specter of potential tax increases, delays in medical testing, and not being able to keep their current coverage are broached. So we like the idea until you start talking about what impact it might have on me. So I think what this means to us and to our listeners, Brandon, is we need to follow these debates very closely, and we need to make sure we do everything we can to let our views be known to the people who represent us or are running to represent us.
We can bring this discussion full circle. We inaugurated the discussion by talking about Bernie Sanders' plan and how it differs from others. It also connects back to this idea that Americans are kind of divided on what to do. There's not a huge consensus on this, something that happened at a recent town hall that the senator participated in.
Yeah, I find this interesting. I don't know what the implications are, so it's a story just meant as an illustration, and each person can derive their own meanings. During a recent Fox News town hall meeting with Bernie Sanders, the host asked the audience how many had private insurance. Most of them raised their hands, as you would expect. When asked how many would like to see Medicare for All, again, most people raised their hands. Most Americans do not understand the details or implications of what's being discussed, and many ideas at present are very nascent. So the idea is stay tuned and be informed.
Dr. Carol Myers of the University of Tennessee College of Nursing, thank you so much for joining me on Health Connections.
It's always my pleasure, Brandon. Thank you.